Hi, welcome back to the Ross Lair podcast. We'd like to continue our conversations with Noel Cullerton on the great musicians and composers who shaped our world. Noel, in your book, Classic Connections, you talk about Frederick Delius. Can you tell me about him?
Yeah, Frederick Delius was he was born in 1862 in Bradford in Yorkshire in England. His father and mother came from Germany to Bradford to make a living out of the wool trade. England was, Yorkshire, a lot of the, was world leader in the wool trade, and so the parents, his parents came to Germany to make a living at it. And the father did very well. And he dearly wanted Frederick to follow him into this trade. The young man was educated with this in mind. He got his after school, he got a job as a company rep, and it didn't go too badly. But he was then sent to Germany to do the company business. But instead of doing any business, he spent his time travelling all around the great musical cities of Germany and completely ignoring the business. On subsequent trips to Sweden, France, he unashamedly put his musical interests before his business interests. He was just about the worst businessman now since money was invented. That's the truth of the poor devil. After 3 years, the father realised that the young Delius had no intention of following him a career in the wool as a wool merchant. Nevertheless, he was completely opposed to him going into the music as a full-time career. This father was a hard-edged businessman, reckoned there was no money to be made in music. As a last resort, the father sponsored him to go to America, to a place called Solano Grove in Florida, in the United States, to manage, of all things, an orange plantation. So off he went. However, this didn't work out very well either. The young Delius completely ignored the plantation and allowed the oranges to rot in the fields. Instead, he spent all his time imbibing the local rich American music scene. It was the workers' songs that he heard wafting across the St. John's River made him more determined than ever to become a composer. The African-American melodies he heard had a profound influence on him, and it can be heard in some of his early pieces, a piece like Appalachia. He appointed a manager of the Orange Grove, and he vanished. Off he went. He went to Virginia and then to New York to study music, and he made a living out of giving some lessons. From a business point of view, the trip was a disaster. But from a musical point of view, it was very good because that influences of America and the African-American stuff stayed with him for the rest of his time. He wrote some great music, such as the Florida Suite, which is still played very regularly now. That was inspired by his time, as you say, in Florida. At this stage, anyway, his father was in despair, and he reluctantly allowed him to leave America and spend some time studying in the Leipzig Conservatory in Germany. The big event that happened there, that he made a lifelong friend out of the Norwegian composer Grieg, who had a major influence on his compositions, also persuaded the father to allow him to study and also helped to put on some of his early music. However, Delius was his own man, and he wasn't particularly taken with academic life, so off he went to Paris. And there he spent the next few years living the high life, socialising and drinking as young men do. A critic at the time described him as attractive, warm-hearted and amorous. The problem was, I suspect, that maybe he was a little bit too amorous because he contracted the dreaded syphilis disease as a young man. And this was destined to cause a complete physical breakdown of his health in his old age. But he was philosophical about it. He used to say, "We must atone for what was just a trifling pleasure." The great thing that happened to him around this time that he met and married a painter called, her name was Jelka Rosen in 1903, and she was a great woman. She stood by him through his affairs and through his ramblings and through his sicknesses right into his old age. And she had bought a house outside Fontainebleau, just outside Paris. It was very handy for him. They could travel around a little bit. But this house had the most magnificent garden. It was full of flowers and shrubs, and the garden ran down to a wood, which in turn ran down to a river. And that he lived in that garden on and off for the rest of his days, and it inspired a huge amount of the nature. He wasn't a religious man, he was more of a pantheist. He believed religion was all around him and in nature. He was one of the real lovers of nature, and that comes across in his music very well. And that garden, I think, was a great boon to him. He wrote 6 operas, none of them that well known. A Village, Romeo and Juliet, is probably the best known, and the piece out of that is well known as The Walk to the Paradise Garden, being the most famous piece from it. But he wrote lots of well-known short pieces that are well-known today. In a Summer Garden is one, and probably his best-known piece is on Hearing the First Cuckoo in Spring. He's a composer, he's not to everyone's taste, but he's rich, luscious music. Had a difficult wasn't highly successful in his day and is not widely listened to today, but I reckon he should be listened to a good deal more. And some of the best known pieces, like the Florida Suite and the First Cuckoo in Spring, are being played increasingly around today, I'd say.
That piece was called A Walk to the Paradise Garden by Delius, recorded by the London Symphony Orchestra, with Barry Wordsworth conducting. This is all fascinating stuff. Could you tell me what your favourite opera is?
Oh, no, that's a hard question. There are so many great operas. We've already talked about Verdi and the great operas he wrote. Another great operatic composer was Puccini, who wrote such operas, La Bohème, Tosca, Turandot. Mozart wrote some lovely operas with some great singing in them. I'd have to include Dvořák's opera Rusalka. This was performed by the Wexford Opera in the year that they were building the new opera house when they staged it in the gardens of Johnstown Castle. That was a great night. Nonetheless, you've asked me to pick a favourite opera, and I'd have to say it'd be the opera Carmen by French composer Georges Bizet. He wrote it when he was 27 years of age. He wrote it when he was 37 and is now regarded as the world's greatest operas and certainly one of my favourites. Bizet was noted for his talent as a youngster in Paris. He was a schoolboy that nowadays you'd probably call him the student most likely to succeed. You know, he had great faith in himself. He could turn his hand to anything and he was successful. In musical circles, he was regarded as the coming man in musical terms. His look continued to shine on him, and he won that prestigious prize that allowed him to study in Rome for a few years. All expenses paid, and he loved it there. And his head was just overflowing with musical ideas. The problem started to appear, though. Despite all the great ideas, he just couldn't put them down on paper. He'd start off a project full of enthusiasm, and after a while, he'd get fed up with it, and he'd have another great idea, and he'd drop the first one and move on to the second one. He did write one symphony in Rome called the Roma Symphony, completed many years later. But anyway, he returned to Paris. He was all set, full of knowledge, full of wisdom, full of ideas, all set to have a brilliant career. And almost immediately, things started to go wrong for him. He was writing lots of music, but there was no one listening. The conservative Paris audiences reckoned that his music was a bit avant-garde and was too advanced for them. One critic famously wrote, "The young Bizet was a musician of incontestable talent, but writes detestable music. The music sounds like the meowings of an amorist or a frightened cat." So it's hard to come back from that. He was just failing to make the cut. He turned to teaching and writing some hack music for piano on commission. It wasn't all doom and gloom. He did write some excellent operas, including The Pearl Fishers, which is best known today for the celebrated duet sung by two fishermen known as The Pearl Fishers. And if you listen to Lyric FM at all, that's played nearly every day. He also wrote an opera, La Jolie Fille de Perth, which has some remarkable tunes in it. But by all accounts, it was probably the worst script that was ever written for an opera. So it's performed, but not that successfully. He eventually came across the story of Carmen, and it was the perfect thing that he wanted. At long last, he had exactly what he wanted. Carmen, the heroine of the opera, is a beautiful but tempestuous woman who was desired by all the men in the cigarette factory where they all work. She's arrested after a fight, and she's put into the custody of a guy at the corporal Don Jose. Jose falls for her hook, line and sinker and allows her to escape. He is then arrested At that stage, the glamorous bullfighter S. Camillo arrives on the scene and he sets his sights on Carmen. Jose is still very much in love with her and he's prepared to desert the army to stay with her. But remember, this is opera and nothing ever comes out the way you think. The fickle Carmen abandons him and goes to S. Camillo. Jose is distraught and after failing completely to persuade her to start a new life with him, he is so crazed with hatred and jealousy and grief and everything, he stabs her to death. That's the end of the opera. So it's a dramatic story and it's full of great lively music. There's bullfighting scenes in it. The atmosphere is great. It's a bit like Wexford and Kilkenny playing in the Leinster final when we used to get to them. You know, it's great atmosphere. It's a great old opera. And it's one of my favourites.
L'amour est un oiseau rebelle que nul ne peut apprivoiser. Et c'est bien au vin qu'on l'appelle s'il lui convient de refuser. Et en effet, menace aux prières, l'un parle bien, l'autre se tait. C'est l'autre que je préfère, il n'a rien dit, mais il me plaît. Si tu ne m'aimes pas, je t'aime. Si je t'aime, prends garde à toi. Si tu ne m'aimes pas, si tu ne m'aimes pas, je t'aime. Mais si je t'aime, si je t'aime, prends garde à toi.
That was George Bizet's Carmen, sung by Anna Katrina Antonacci at the Royal Opera. In terms of COVID, how serious a problem do you reckon that is for, you know, for these operas? And
it must be terrible. It must be terrible. I don't know, because I live in a little bubble at home now, sitting listening to music on the lyric or my CDs and writing all this old rubbish. So I don't know what's going on in the real world, but it must be incredibly difficult for them. Look at Wexford Opera. Look what they had to do last year now. And they just about did a great show. But I'm a volunteer. I'm a volunteer in the operas. I show people to their seats. But will it go on this year? Who knows?
Who knows, yeah.
It must be incredibly difficult for them. And that's every opera house all over Europe. And the problem is, even if it did come back, will people go? Will they be still frightened?
Could you tell me a little bit about music being played in Johnstone Castle?
Yeah, that happened, I think the year was 2007, I'm not sure. But the opera house, the old opera house in High Street, was being knocked down and renovated. Now they had a problem. Where are they going to stage the opera? And I had just taken over as boss in Johnstone, and they came to me and said, could we put it in Johnstone? And I says, the Pope Catholic, of course you can, away with you. So they put on the opera. I stayed well out of the way and they got on with it. And they put on the most magnificent festival ever, I would have thought. It was a lovely summer's evening. It was in July. And people used to come out. They used to bring picnics with them. And they had picnics around the grounds and the gardens of Johnstone. And then they'd go into the opera. And I remember the peacocks used to be on bagpipe used to be playing the bagpipes from the roof of the castle. And the peacocks used to answer his call. And you said, it was just a magic time. And the operas, I think, rose to the occasion. My favourite one that we mentioned there was an opera by Dvořák, a very famous Czech composer, who wrote an opera called Rosalka. And I thought it was just magic. They came back into Wexford then when the opera opened, to that magnificent opera house.
I'm going to ask you the question now. Do you see, because of COVID and what's happened, that in actual fact, more opera will be done outdoors again? Do you think it can revert back to something like it was?
I hadn't even given that any thought, but you're probably right. It would be. But then it was outdoors, but it wasn't outdoors. They built a huge stadium to put it on. There was a much fancier word than that, but I know that it was inside, even though it was outside, if you know what I mean. So putting on operas outside, you know, the weather, they do have operas in Italy now, in Verona. They have
We've got the best weather in this country. What are you talking about? Sunny southeast.
Yeah, hopefully, it's a lovely idea. But certainly, you know, in Italy now, Verona, they put on, there's a big stadium in Verona, and it's a huge tourist attraction. Every night they put on the operas by Verdi and Puccini, really dramatic stuff. And you get your bottle of wine and you have your candle and you sit down and you watch it all on the outside. It's magic. So if we could do that here, it'd be just tremendous.
Well, if we could guarantee that the weather would be good, I'd much prefer to watch an opera out in God's fresh air than I would in a theatre at the moment. Well, not necessarily at the moment, at any time, to be honest.
You know, I presume you're at the electrical end of it and the electronics and all that could be a nightmare if it was done outside. But it could well be the way of the future. Who knows? But I'm just hoping they'll be back. You know, we want the opera back. We want the opera back in Wexford and back attracting all those people to it and the buzz that's around Wexford town. It's just a tremendous time. So I'm just hoping, against hope, that we'll come back this year.
Keep on listening to TRP.